Good morning. My name is Susan Muirhead, and today I'll be reading part one of the News Gazette, dated for this date, Tuesday, November 17th, 2020. Let's begin with some of today's headlines. The first headline reads, Our County, Villa Grove, Bridging the Gap. There's a large photograph in the center of the front page of the newspaper, and it's of construction on a street and a bridge, basically. The caption reads, Work continues Monday on the Sycamore Street, Illinois 130 bridge, spanning the Embras River in Villa Grove. The project has bogged down the busy thoroughfare since the pandemic arrived in March. It will be some time before it's finished. And there will be a follow-up story on that in a little bit. The next headline reads, Champaign Homicide, The Aftermath. Police, shooting victim's brother was seeking revenge. This article is written by Mary Shank and is based out of Urbana. A Champaign man out to avenge the slaying of his brother in their home last week is facing a mandatory prison term if convicted of a weapons violation. Camrion, K-A-M-R-I-O-N, Wilson, 20, was formally charged Monday with possession of a stolen gun and aggravated unlawful use of weapons. Wilson was arrested Friday after he allegedly pointed a loaded gun at a relative of Calvin Williams, 18, the man charged with killing Wilson's brother, Jerriante Brown, 16, on Thursday evening. Wilson's timing was such that Champaign Police Detective Sergeant Dave Griffith happened to be in the apartment where Wilson came looking for Williams, who had been living there before fleeing to Michigan, where he previously lived. State's Attorney Julia Reed said when the shooting started Thursday on Eureka Street, Mr. Brown was on the phone with relatives telling them that Williams was shooting at their house. His older brother, Wilson, was present when one of the shots fired hit his younger brother in the chest, mortally wounding him. Champaign police quickly went to work trying to locate Williams. Reed said police learned that Williams and Mr. Brown had been feuding on social media, reportedly over a debt. On Friday, Griffith was in the apartment where Williams lived locally, speaking with a relative when there was a knock on the door. A masked man wearing gloves with his hood up and holding a gun confronted the man who opened the door. Reed said Griffith was behind the door, heard and saw what was transpiring, and immediately ordered Wilson to get on the ground and give up the gun. Wilson complied and was arrested within seconds. No one was hurt. Reed said police learned that the gun Wilson had was reported stolen from Westville about a year ago. Possession of a stolen weapon is a Class II felony offense, carrying a mandatory prison term of between 3 and 7 years in prison. Wilson, who listed an address in the 600 block of East Eureka Street in Champaign, was also charged with 2 counts of aggravated unlawful use of a weapon for being under 21 and not having a firearm owner's identification card. Those are less serious Class 4 felonies. He has no prior convictions, Reed said. Wilson is being held on $500,000 bail and is due back in court December 9th for a probable cause hearing. Williams, charged with murder, remains jailed in Berrien County, Michigan, in lieu of $1 million bond set up by a Champaign County judge. He's expected to be extradited to Champaign County soon. He reportedly stole a car from Town Center Apartments in Champaign to make his way north, Reed said. The next headline reads, 2021 Election First Look. Urbana's Marlin among 15 to file in Champaign-Urbana. This article is written by Ben Sigderman. A pandemic makes getting signatures a little trickier for candidates, but 15 who plan to run for local office in Champaign and Urbana did so, filing their petitions as the spring elections period opened Monday. Getting signatures was hard, said Champaign District 5 Councilwoman Vanna Pianfetti. I went through a lot of wipes and a lot of hand sanitizer to make sure my clipboard wouldn't infect other people. She said she was heartened to see the line of candidates who filed first thing Monday morning. Mornings like today recharge me, Pianfetti said. Petitions can be filed through November 23rd in Champaign and Urbana. If necessary, primaries will be held February 23rd before the general election on April 6th. Here's a look at who has filed so far. Davion Williams filed papers for District 1, which is currently represented by Clarissa Nickerson Foreman. Alicia Beck filed for re-election in District 2. In District 3, Matt Sullard, president of the Young Professionals of Champaign-Urbana Organization, and Daniel Iniguez, the owner of Raw Fitness Personal Training, filed to run for the position seat held by Angie Bricks. A Parkland College and U of I grad, Iniguez said he wants to bring his experience running a business to the city council. "I saw an opportunity to use some of my small business experience to approach the city's needs," he said. "I want to take my small business experience and apply it to some of the struggles Champaign is seeing this year, especially with the pandemic." Councilman Greg Stock filed for re-election in District 4. "I think it's going to be a big next few years in terms of Champaign, with COVID and the fallout from that and trying to get back on track with our different projects and goals," he said. "It's all about consistency and experience and trying to work through our issues." Pianfetti is running for re-election in District 5. "When COVID hit and a lot of the issues surrounding social justice came to the forefront, I realized I'm in this for another term," she said. Township Supervisor Andy Kornstrom and Assessor Paul Faraci also both filed for re-election. In Urbana, Mayor Diane Marlin formally announced Monday that she'll run for a second term. She's running on her experience improving the city's financial situation. With budget cuts and tax increases, Marlin helped eliminate the city's structural deficit and put Urbana in position to avoid further cuts during the pandemic. She also touted her commitment to public infrastructure and the city's response to COVID-19 in concert with Champaign, the CU Public Health District, and the University of Illinois. She will be running against Andy Ma in the Democratic primary. To represent Ward 1, no one has yet filed papers, but incumbent Mary Alice Wu said she plans to run for re-election to help the city with its comprehensive plan. "That's something I advocated for pretty strongly at the beginning of my term," said Wu, who was elected to her first term in 2017. The Ward 2 seat is vacant after Julie Lott stepped down. She was appointed to replace Eric Jacobson, who stepped down to focus on his research. Marlin is accepting applications until November 30th to fill out the remainder of this term, and no one has yet filed papers to run in the spring election. Ward 3 Alderwoman Cherise Hersey, appointed in January 2019 to fill out Aaron Ammons' term after he was elected Champaign County Clerk, said she plans to file her papers to run. "There's a couple of things that I'm trying to finish off," she said. "I want to see this through with the pandemic." And she added, "I still want a grocery store on the North End. I know that we need a grocery store." She'll be running against Democrat Deborah Liu in the primary. Ward 4 Alderman Bill Brown said that after two terms, he won't be seeking re-election. "8 years was always my goal," he said Monday. "I didn't see any real reason to change that." So far, Democrat Jaya Colasetti has filed papers for his seat, or to run for his seat. Two candidates have filed petitions to replace longtime Ward 5 Representative Dennis Roberts, who recently announced he wouldn't run again after 16 years on the council. Democrats Megan McDonald, a local organizer, and Chandra Bishop, who just narrowly lost in her race to be county coroner, filed papers Monday. In Ward 6, no candidates filed papers on Monday. Independent Bill Colebrook has held the position since March, when he was appointed to replace Dean Hazen. Former Champaign County Board member James Quisenberry filed to run in Ward 7, currently represented by Jared Miller. Quisenberry is the Director of Technology for the U of I's Student Affairs Office and served on the county board from 2010 to 2016. The next headline reads, U.S. Department of Education, claims of anti-Semitism at U of I under investigation. This article is written by Ben Sigderman and is based out of Urbana. A month after Jewish groups went public with complaints of anti-Semitism at the University of Illinois, administrators and those groups issued a joint statement Monday condemning such acts. They also agreed to create an advisory council to address the issues and to add educational programming on anti-Semitism. But there's no sign that the Jewish groups are withdrawing the complaint, which is now the subject of a discrimination investigation by the U.S. Department of Education's Office of Civil Rights. We've been working collaboratively on this joint statement for weeks, U of I spokeswoman Robin Kaler said. We received notification of the investigation from DOE late Friday. The statement is independent from any DOE process. The complaint was originally filed in March by two students who accused administrators of not doing enough to address anti-Semitism on campus. They cited examples in recent years of swastikas drawn on or near campus, vandalism to the menorah at the Chabad Center, opposition from the Students for Justice in Palestine student group, a resolution passed by the Illinois student government tying the destruction of Palestinian lands with divesting from the police, and a presentation to residence hall advisors about Palestinian resistance to 70 years of Israeli terror. It was publicized last month by the Louis D. Brandeis Center for Human Rights Under Law, which was one of the groups that issued the joint statement that was sent in a mass email to the entire campus. The statement was also joined by the Jewish United Fund Chicago, Illini Hillel, Hillel International, Illini Chabad, and Arnold and Porter, the law firm that represented the students who filed the complaint. Anti-Semitism, anti-Semitic forms of anti-Zionism, and other forms of discrimination have no place at this university, the joint statement said. It also said that the steps announced Monday alone will not effectively dispel the environment that many Jewish students have felt to be unwelcoming. Thus, our collective and collective efforts will not end with these actions. Aliza Lewin, the president of the Brandeis Center, agreed that more still needs to be done. This is a first step, she said. There's a long ways to go. But she said that in conversations with the administration, they definitely understand the seriousness of the issue. Lewin was pleased that the statement said that for many Jewish students, Zionism is an integral part of their identity and their ethnic and ancestral heritage. But at Monday's U of I Academic Senate meeting, Professor Bruce Rosenstock took issue with this line. While this is true, it is also true that for many Jewish students and many Jews around the world, Zionism is not an integral part of their identity, he said. I hope that your advisory council includes both groups. Chancellor Robert Jones said he understood that not all Jews identify with Zionism. Of course, any strategy going forward has to be balanced. It has to be inclusive, he said. That is something that I'm absolutely going to insist upon. The next headline reads, Illinois impact. As Prisker hopes for early spring widespread vaccine distribution, Ezekiel warns of rough ride ahead. Monday's news that Moderna's new vaccine has an early success rate nearing 95% had Governor J.B. Pritzker expressing a hint of optimism. We have real hope for possible widespread distribution by early spring, he said. But Public Health Director Dr. Ngozi Ezike was quick to add, we are in for a rough ride for the next 3 months or so. She spoke as hospitalizations statewide increased for the 22nd straight day to a pandemic high of 5,581. While Champaign had the lowest 7-day positivity rate of the 21 counties in Region 6, 12 COVID-positive county residents are now hospitalized, up to overnight, and Region 6's 7-day rate kept climbing from 13.6% to 14%. St. Joseph Ogden High plans to offer in-person learning beyond this week, district leaders decided Monday. Among those planning to reassess whether they'll do likewise after Thanksgiving break, Fisher, Heritage, Rantoul, and unity. The 139 cases reported Monday in Piatt County are for the five-day period that started a week ago. The local health department's first update since Wednesday showed 47 new cases in Monticello, and this information was provided to us by Jeff D'Alessio. The next headline reads, Top of the Morning. Something to get you going today, courtesy of Vice President Jim Rosso. Last year, their fundraising Christmas tree sale took a hit when thieves swiped 3 dozen Fraser firs from the big white tent on the corner of Madison Springfield in Champaign. This year, it's COVID-19 delivering the haymaker. The CU Optimist Club, which for more than 70 years sold live trees to benefit children, will take this holiday season off, organizer Jack Windholm said. He said the idea of putting volunteers in harm's way made it a necessary call. Most of our club members are in the bullseye age range, said Windholm, 81. The virus is a fact of life. Nobody likes it, and you have to adapt to it. The community rallied behind the optimists last year, donating enough to make up for the stolen trees. Those still selling trees have more changes, too. Tate Trees, north of Champaign, turns 50 years old this year. Instead of a celebration, co-founder Richard Hansons is asking for patience among customers who will be asked to shop in small, socially distant groups and wear masks at all times. Tate Trees is opening earlier than usual, Monday, in hopes of spreading out business. Hansons and Fred Tate hatched the idea in 1970 to fill the vacant spot between harvest and spring, he said. Today, Hansons and his son, Jason, and Leon Fries carry on the tradition. Questions, comments, suggestions? Email Jim Rosso at jrossow@newsgazette.com. And there's a couple pictures that go along with this article. There's a picture of Jack Windholm standing next to a tree in the white tent from probably last year or years before. And a sign that says Christmas Trees, CU Optimist Club, the scene most years near the corner of Madison Springfield in Champaign. And again, they won't be selling trees this year, but I hope they resume next year. Corrections. The News Gazette strives to present fair and accurate reporting and to correct any errors as promptly as possible. Corrections and clarifications for all sections run on this page. To report an error, please call 217-351-5252, then press 6 to reach the newsroom. The next headline reads, History. Area History. In 1920, a mail aeroplane, M-A-I-L, aeroplane, flying between St. Louis and Chicago, crashed this morning in Mr. Leonard's pasture a half mile west of Thomasboro. The plane was wrecked, but the pilot was not injured. In 1970, with no discussion and no objections from nearly 100 people attending the meeting, the Urbana City Council voted to allow all licensed liquor establishments to open after noon on Sunday. The change brings Urbana into line with Champaign County's liquor laws. In 2005, fans will find plenty to be thankful for in and around Memorial Stadium on November 25th and 26th at the Illinois High School Association 2005 football championships. This year's 16 top teams could include Unity High School in Tolono, Mohammed Seymour High School, Tuscola High School, and Westville High School. Fans can also enjoy free entertainment, activities, and group game watching in a tent city that will be put up by the Champaign County Convention and Visitors Bureau, Champaign County Sports Commission, and University of Illinois Division of Intercollegiate Athletics. In international history, today's highlight, on November 17, 1800, Congress held its first session in the partially completed U.S. Capitol building. On this date, in 1558, Elizabeth I acceded to the English throne upon the death of her half-sister, Queen Mary, beginning a 44-year reign. In 1869, the Suez Canal opened in Egypt. In 1970, the Soviet Union landed an unmanned remote-controlled vehicle on the moon, the Lunokhod, that's L-U-N-O-K-H-O-A-D, the Lenacod won. In 2003, Arnold Schwarzenegger was sworn in as the 38th governor of California. And in 2018, tribesmen on the isolated island of North Sentinel, between India and Southeast Asia, were seen dragging and burying the body of American missionary John Allen Chow, who had reached the island the previous day, despite a ban imposed by India's government. The next headline reads, Coronavirus Response, Truly Striking. Second vaccine shows success in U.S. tests. This article is written by Lauren Neergaard for the Associated Press. A second experimental COVID-19 vaccine, this one from Moderna, Inc., right? The other one was from Pfizer, which we'll read about too, yielded extraordinarily strong early results Monday, another badly needed dose of hope as the pandemic enters a terrible new phase. Moderna said its vaccine appears to be 94.5% effective, according to preliminary data from an ongoing study. A week ago, competitor Pfizer, Inc. announced its own vaccine looked 90% effective, news that puts both companies on track to seek permission within weeks for emergency use in the U.S. The results are truly striking, said Dr. Anthony Fauci, the U.S. government's top infectious disease expert. The vaccines that we're talking about and vaccines to come are really the light at the end of the tunnel. A vaccine can't come fast enough, as virus cases topped 11 million in the U.S. over the weekend, 1 million of them recorded in just the past week, and governors and mayors are ratcheting up restrictions ahead of Thanksgiving. The outbreak has killed more than 1.3 million people worldwide, more than 246,000 of them in the U.S. Stocks rallied on Wall Street and around the world on rising hopes that the global economy could start returning to normal in the coming months. The Dow Jones Industrial Average gained more than 470 points, or 1.6%, to close at a record high of over 29,950. Moderna stock was up almost 10%. Both vaccines require two shots, given several weeks apart. U.S. officials said they hope to have about 20 million Moderna doses and another 20 million of the vaccine made by Pfizer and its German partner BioNTech to use in late December. Dr. Stephen Hoge, Moderna's president, welcomed the really important milestone, but said having similar results from two different companies is what's most reassuring. That should give us all hope that actually a vaccine is going to be able to stop this pandemic and hopefully get us back to our lives, Hoge, that's H-O-G-E, told the Associated Press. He added, it won't be Moderna alone that solves this problem. It's going to require many vaccines to meet the global demand. If the Food and Drug Administration allows emergency use of Moderna's or Pfizer's candidate, there will be limited rationed supplies before the end of the year. Exactly who is first in line has yet to be decided, but Health and Human Services Secretary Alex Azar said the hope is that enough doses are available by the end of January to vaccinate adults over 65 who are at the highest risk from the coronavirus and healthcare workers. Fauci said it may take until spring or summer before anyone who is not high risk and wants a shot can get one. Neil Browning of Bothell, Washington, who rolled up his sleeves back in March for the first testing of Moderna's vaccine in humans, said he's excited about Monday's excellent news, but is still carefully wearing a mask and taking other precautions. I'm super happy to be a part of this and to try and help bring some kind of peace back to the world, Browning said. I have a lot of hope. The National Institutes of Health helped create the vaccine Moderna is manufacturing, and NIH's director, Dr. Francis Collins, said the two companies' parallel results give scientists a lot of confidence that we're on the path toward having effective vaccines. And there's a photograph. Biotechnology company Moderna keeps protocol files for COVID-19 vaccinations at the Research Centers of America in Hollywood, Florida. There's a picture of a masked scientist with the vaccine in packages in front of him. The next headline reads, Champaign-Urbana Park Districts. facility use restricted in light of virus spread. This article is written by Anthony Zillis. With COVID-19 cases spiking across the state, both the Champaign and Urbana Park districts are limiting the availability of their facilities. In Champaign, the biggest change to plans came for Leonard Recreation Center, which had to shut down last week because of staffing issues related to COVID-19 cases among staff and the resulting contact tracing. Instead of reopening this week for members, the facility is only reopening for fitness programming. We decided to pause that with numbers spiking in the community, just to give everybody kind of a breath in a way, Champaign Park District spokesperson Chelsea Norton said. Tentatively, Norton said Leonard would reopen to members after Thanksgiving. Other facilities will also remain open for specific programming. The Urbana Park District suspended walk-in traffic at its indoor facilities as well as indoor fitness programs at Phillips Recreation Center and Brookins Gym, indoor lap swim, water exercise classes, and swim team practices at Urbana Indoor Aquatic Center and rentals for its indoor facilities. Those changes went into effect at 5 p.m. on Monday. We had been thinking about suspending programs and facility access over the weekend with COVID-19 cases ramping up, Public Information and Marketing Manager Mark Schultz said. Park District leadership discussed amongst themselves, and we were in contact with Champaign-Urbana Public Health. Unlike in the spring, both park districts have left playgrounds and parks open while encouraging social distancing and masks to be worn. In the spring, none of us knew what to expect, so we did what we could to protect the community, Norton said. Part of that was closing playgrounds, and that was more of a precaution because we didn't know how long it would stay on a playground surface. Research definitely shows now that it's safer than we previously thought it might be. And there's a nice photograph of a pedestrian is reflected in the window as they walk by the closed Leonard Recreation Center on Monday. The next headline reads, Interfaith Alliance of Champaign-Urbana, virtual celebration to focus on solidarity, gratitude. This article is by Deborah Pressy and is based out of Champaign. With an escalating pandemic, civil unrest, and an emotional election, there's been plenty of stress to go around this year. But a group of local churches want to suggest a mental and emotional reset as Thanksgiving approaches, embracing gratitude, solidarity, and gifts of love. The Interfaith Alliance of Champaign-Urbana is going ahead with its fourth annual Thanksgiving Celebration Sunday, but in an all virtual way. It will include sharing what you're thankful for on the group's Facebook page, followed by a Zoom gathering at 5 p.m. with prayer, readings, and candle lighting. Participants can place their own battery-operated or otherwise safe candle in their windows in the evening to share their solidarity. The Reverend Cheryl Palmer, chair of the Interfaith Alliance and pastor of Champaign's Faith United Methodist Church, said the first Thanksgiving celebration in 2016 was intended to promote solidarity and healing after a divisive election. And we just found that people needed to come together in solidarity, she said. That's needed just as much this year, Palmer said. It's easy to feel down, which just adds to fear and anxiety, she said. So if we focus on the positive and what we have in common, which is often what we are all thankful for, we will feel it is just one small step we can take in this troubled time, she said. Also, part of the year's celebration is an invitation to help the homeless by collecting items for the shelters at CU at Home. Donations can also be made to CU at Home's One Winter Night fundraiser coming up in February 2021. Items can be taken to CU at Home, which is located at 70 East Washington Street in Champaign. For more information, please check out facebook.com/interfaithcu. I'm Susan Muirhead. Stay tuned for part 2.